Hey cousins, and we're back. Welcome for another episode of What's Next Gen XYZ. This week, we sat on the virtual couch with Dakota Tyler, who is a doctoral student at UCLA and is an astrophysicist, y'all. That's right, an astrophysicist. So we'll find out, how do you even become one? What is one? What are the different job fields that you could get into with a degree in astrophysics? And also just what his plans are and what is his passion right now as he's working in this field. So stay tuned, check it out. I wanted to reach out to the audience members. If you've listened to our season 5, episode 7, we sat down with Brittany Chambers, who is a riding instructor. She has her own business where she works with horses in a therapeutic way. And for those of you that may have listened to that episode and you follow her on social media, on Instagram, she is Brittany C. Horsemanship is her handle. Unfortunately, with the droughts that California has experienced, there are now some areas of California that have gotten a torrential downpour of rain now. So it's like they went from one extreme to drought to now in torrential downpour. Where Brittany and her facilities are, unfortunately, they've experienced flash floods. And as a result, a lot of her facility has been damaged. The horses have had to been involved in emergency evacuation because a lot of the area has flooded where they are. And if you go to her page, we'll also post in the show notes a link where you can go and kind of help them out. They are asking for donations and they do have a supply list listed of just some emergency supplies that they need in order to just continue to care for the horses while they're looking at options for fixing the facility and bringing the facility back up. Brittany does a wonderful job working with youth of all ages, whether they want to get into the equestrian field or they want to work with animals in more of a therapeutic way as a part of their therapy programs that they could be working with in various forms of mental health, even addiction or abuse. So let's help her out, people. If you could pass the word on anything that you could do, even just giving them words of positivity and sending them an email and say, hey, I just want to send you some words of encouragement. I heard what happened, goes a long way. You'd be surprised. So we're going to post their information in show notes. And we're just asking you guys to reach out, spread the word. And if you're looking for some good to do, and doesn't the world need more of that? This would definitely be that cause. All right. And without further ado, stay tuned for this commercial break. And then right after, we're on the virtual couch with Dakota Tyler.
At PGD, you're not just a listener, you're family. Is there a career you'd like us to explore or a success story you'd love to share and have us highlight on one of our episodes? Email us at pgdfam@gmail.com. Subscribe to our show so you can get notified when new episodes drop. Help increase our reach with a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey cousins, and welcome to another episode. I have been combing the streets of TikTok, and like DJ Khaled, I found another one. So if you've ever wondered what it takes to be a scientist, if you or a loved one has ever stared up into the vast sky like Tommy Lee Jones and Men in Black, this episode is for you. So we'd like to welcome to the virtual couch astrophysicist Dakota Tyler. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited about this. I like that introduction too. That was
Leave it to Rachel. She's extremely creative. So that's her.
So we also have audience members that are in various stages of their life, many of them in high school and getting ready to transition into college. Mm-hmm. So take us back to that time period in your life. Were you one of those kids that you knew coming out of high school, you were going to college, you were prepared for that? Did you not know? What was that time period like for you?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And this is actually one of my first missteps. So if I go back into high school, this is pre-science for me, pie in the sky type of thinking. And I was actually really into sports. So I wanted to go to the NFL. I was pretty good in high school, and I ended up getting a scholarship to the University of Kentucky. So D1 football. And then when I was getting that free education, that was like another misstep. I didn't really take advantage of the fact that I had the opportunity to get, you know, a free education. And I kind of just took classes that were easy enough so that I could focus on sports. And I didn't get interested in science until after my career was over. So I had some knee injuries and I couldn't really train anymore. And I was almost forced to find something else to spend my time doing. And that's when I got into astronomy and astrophysics. And I say that, you know, those first few years were missteps for me because I had to go back to school and take classes that math classes and that sort of thing that I really didn't learn even in high school to prepare to redo an undergraduate degree in physics. And then, you know, obviously now I'm doing my PhD, so I've taken all the following steps. But yeah, it was not until I had to kind of reevaluate my life and pivot to something besides sports that I actually got into science, which involved learning a bunch of physics and math and that sort of thing.
You know, it's very interesting that you point that out because we've had past guests on the show that are definitely a part of your tribe. They were in a particular sport. They were very sport focused because you kind of have to be if your desire is to get to that elite level. You kind of eat, sleep, and dream it. And then for whatever reason, whether it be injury or circumstances, as I like to say, life be lifin', they had to make a pivot. And then from there, that was their point where they kind of evaluated where they were in life and said, you know what, let me explore this interest. So I'm glad that you pointed that out, because I think a lot of times people think that if you're going in one particular track, you can't pivot. Like if I have to commit 100% to doing this one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, the further along you get in any given path, the harder it is to pivot or the more difficult it may be. But that's something to keep in mind as well. If your heart is in doing something else, or you really do want to explore some different area or avenue, that sort of getting the courage and trying to formulate a plan to do that now is better than waiting longer and kind of just having that mounting dissatisfaction with life, or, you know, disinterest, whatever it is that you're doing. Cause it is hard to make that transition, and it gets harder the deeper that you get, you know, in any given other path.
Yeah. So why science? Cause you definitely, you know, something happens and then now you're kind of reevaluating where you're at. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what was it that just attracted you to the sciences? Was it a mentor in particular, or was it someone who you knew that was in the field?
No, I didn't. I had no mentors or no role models or anything like that. I thought that I did watch some astronomy documentaries, and I thought that it was just fascinating, this idea that, you know, we live because we have this really human-centric, Earth-centric view where all of life is like how we fit into society. But realistically, there's like an infinite number of other stars and planets and objects in the universe that are just totally foreign to us because our perspective is small. And something about like widening that perspective and learning about other things that exist really drew me in. I think I've just always been curious, and astronomy sort of naturally satiates and probes and excites that curiosity. So it wasn't like I want to go be a scientist. It was like, damn, this astronomy stuff is really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. How can I make it a bigger part of my life? And then, you know, 6, 7, 8 years later, now I'm a scientist.
Yeah.
So tell us about when you were in the point of a pivot, because I'm going to be honest a little bit here, and I hope there's some guests out here that are thinking like me. I am not ignorant to the fact that I knew astronomy was out there, but I had no idea until actually coming across your videos and TikTok and how you could
take these complex discussions and ideas and condense them into something that is just so easy to understand and absorb. But I had no idea that there were actual degrees and tracks that you could go on and career paths that you could take with this particular knowledge. So during this time period where you're trying to figure out, okay, I'm not going NFL, football stops here. What is the next step that I want to do in my life? Did you go through a period of research to kind of understand what you could do with your interest, or did you kind of already know what was out there?
Yeah, so I had to kind of look up. So it is a very, it's a really small field. You pointed that out. And there's not a lot of sort of already built-in opportunities. Like you can go be a professor somewhere, for example, or there's a number of institutions that you could do research for. If you think about NASA or even some aerospace companies have like astronomy divisions, but there's not a lot of like kind of preset positions to fill in. So it ends up being extremely competitive. Like getting a job as a professor of astronomy is, I mean, I think it's probably easier to become a professional athlete. Like it's, the numbers are like, wow. The numbers are that slim. There may be across the country, there may be a dozen astronomy professor jobs open for hundreds or, you know, maybe 1,000 people that end up getting their PhDs that year. So the numbers are not super friendly. And that didn't stop me at the time. As time has gone, though, I think that I want to kind of pivot away from academia and get more into doing the science communication, which is what you're seeing an attempt of when you check out my TikTok page. But that's really what I love is, you know, communicating the stuff about space, which is interesting, but in a digestible way, and in a way that means something, like in a way that is impactful, that's having like a positive impact. I think that there's a lot that translates from understanding the universe at large to like just understanding even ourselves and in our own lives.
I love that. I think there's certain things, whether we're talking subject matter wise or profession wise, that just isn't talked about enough. And this definitely is one of them. Because when you think of, especially going into the sciences, it's always talked about healthcare. So naturally, when someone says, oh, I wanted to go to school and I wanted to go into biochemistry or I wanted to take heavy science and math, you naturally think either the person is going engineering or they're going to go into the healthcare field. So I like that you're promoting, no, there's other options out there, and this is one of those.
Yeah.
So when you decided this is the track that I want to go, I'm going to have to take more math that I didn't take in college, and there's some things that I'm going to have to do to prep and get ready for this course. What was that like? Like going through the curriculum and the program, what kinds of math did you have to take? Just kind of talk to us about that process a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So first, I didn't have the qualifications to get into the undergrad program for my bachelor's. So I went to a community college and needed to actually go all the way back and take algebra and trigonometry, which these are usually, you know, you're introduced to algebra, at least in a thorough sense, and at some point in high school. Mm-hmm. And so I had to retake those classes in community college. I took calculus, and there's multiple years of calculus. So it can be broken up in several ways, but there's like a calc one, calc two, then there's like a multivariable calculus, then there's differential equations and linear algebra. So I ended up taking a whole bunch of math classes from, you know, basically spanning from what you may get in 10th or 11th grade in high school all the way up through, you know, graduate level courses. And the science, all of the science classes kind of come along with that. You take the physics classes with the math classes as you're learning them, and, you know, the various maths are introduced as ways to sort of logically fit in and solve problems in physics, which is difficult. It is difficult to learn both of them, especially after, I feel like it's something that is a lot easier if you get into it at a much younger age and you kind of like are always working those muscles and developing those pathways. But yeah, I mean, imagine just basically starting over. You know, I knew how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, and like that's where it stopped.
Yeah.
Kind of from there took the next 10 or so steps to get ultimately where I'm at now.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty intense, and it's not easy. And definitely for you to say, hey, I sat here and took all these classes already, and none of these are sufficient enough to still get me across the finish line to go back. So I'm sure there were moments where you questioned yourself. How did you get through a period of saying, do I want to keep doing this, or should I pick something else? So what was that motivating factor for you to kind of push through?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's one thing that I think everybody can learn from, you know, any story that involves perseverance. And that's that in the marathon, there are going to be times when there's extreme lows. And for me, I think that at each stage, I really knew I was interested in it and I really wanted to do it. And it didn't bother me, like if I was gonna, at how high of a level I was gonna be able to do it at. So like, for example, I wasn't planning on like getting into the bachelor's program at Harvard for physics or something like that. And that really didn't bother me. Ultimately, I wanted to get my PhD and, you know, I wasn't like shooting for all of the prestige and that sort of thing. And it just didn't bother me. Like, as long as I kept doing the steps, I was going to be happy to get to the next level. And ultimately what happened was, as I became really intentional about seeking out advice just from other people, perhaps students that were a little bit ahead of me or professors that I was coming into contact with, I was able to put together like a really solid plan that I think outpaced students who were academically ahead of me. And at each level, I was able to like get really good research positions in the summer, and then get good recommendation letters to get into a good graduate school, and then you know, pass all my classes there. And it's like, it's one of those things where you don't need to see the whole staircase to take the next step. And if you can really plan out the steps in front of you, then it's easier to not fail at taking those steps. If you're really sinking your focus and your attention to detail to the work that's right in front of you. And then the next thing you know, you look up and you've gone up, you know, you're at the top of Mount Everest or whatever. But
yeah,
for me, it was the main underlying driver is always that I want to be able to do something that I love, that I feel like I'm supposed to be doing, like something that the career I'm trying to create in science, communication, and astronomy is something that I feel is perfectly sort of molded for me to fit in. Like it's something that I'm going to have to create. And I just love that. Like, I love the idea of spending my time doing what drives me and, you know, makes full use of my uniqueness and experiences.
Yeah. So now, most of us, when we're on social media, we're posting cute puppies, we're posting the meal that we ate, you know, we find a funny meme and we're resharing. How did you find a way to kind of marry, man, I really like this field that I'm in, and I want to now put it on social media? How did that come to be?
You know, I've always felt like I wanted to do this thing called science communication, which is, you know, just relaying some of the interesting things that as scientists we learn. And there's no like blueprint for how to best do that. So literally Facebook, in the month of September, they send you the reminder like from 1 year ago or 4 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I got a reminder that 1 year ago from September, so a month or two ago, that I had posted my first video on TikTok, and then I reposted it on Facebook. And it was just, this is something that I'm interested in. It's also fun to create this and try to like make a narrative and tell a story in a short post. And I just did it. And I just kept doing it. And, you know, now here we are a year later, and, you know, I'm getting better and better, and a lot of the videos are well received. But for me, again, it just had to do with, you know, I love science. I love what I'm doing. I love astronomy. I also want to get more into sharing that with the public. So I just started doing it, you know, taking that first step and just continuing to go from there.
I love that. And I love the fact that, because I've seen quite a few of your videos, one where you were explaining the tattoo that you have, mm-hmm. Coming attractions for y'all that don't know what I'm talking about. And just being able to explain some of the difficult topics of like, what is a constellation? Mm-hmm. Or I scroll through some of the comments of your videos sometimes, and people ask interesting questions like, you know, do you think that there's extraterrestrial life, or why does it take so many years, they say, to get from Earth to Mars, and mm-hmm. Some of those questions. But the way that you're able to explain them and then use analogies of everyday things that we do know of topic wise to explain them, that's not something everybody can do. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I definitely think that you're needed in this space, and I'm just excited to see the things that you continue to do with that.
Yeah, so, thanks. I appreciate that.
So since I threw out the coming attractions, do you want to tell the people what I mean when I say tattoo?
What do you mean?
The tattoo that you have, I think it's on like your wrist or your forearm.
Yeah, my forearm. Okay, so mm-hmm. it's called a pulsar map. So there are these objects out in the universe called pulsars, and they're really interesting. So there are stars that are much, much more massive than the sun. And when their lives end, they explode in what's called a supernova. And most of the star is destroyed, but there's this core left behind that's extremely dense and extremely hot. And it's called a neutron star. And some of these neutron stars, they rotate really rapidly, like 100, 200 times per second they're rotating. And they will emit these pulses. We call them pulsars. And they're very distinct. Like each one is very distinct. The pulsations give them their own sort of unique fingerprint. Mm-hmm. And what the pulsar map is it's the Earth's position in space relative to 15 of these pulsars, which again are completely unique. And then the idea is if you put that map, they put it on a satellite and shot it out. The satellite is not really close to the sun anymore. It's like out in interstellar space. And I think it was symbolic. The idea would be that if some aliens found it, they would know where it came from, because they should be able to tell by those unique pulsars exactly sort of where the center of the map is, which is where we are. And I got that tattoo on my forearm. A lot of my tattoos are actually space themed.
In between shows, keep the conversation alive with the youth in your households with our series, The Adventures of Sophie and Olivia, available on Amazon and directly on our website, pgd-innovations.com. The link is in our show notes. Don't forget to check out our merchandise, and we have some limited time gear only that's available this season. Don't miss out.
See, that's pretty people, neat.
Exactly. So if you're going to get a tattoo, get something that's meaningful. Don't do that regular lotus flower, skull and crossbone type stuff.
Hey, elevate no judgment.
Yourself. I'm just saying, elevate yourself. Pulsar map. Boom. So as we continue in your career, let's talk about what it was like when you were transitioning out of college. Now, especially nowadays, that period is very competitive mm-hmm. of a time in life. It's not the days where you just graduate college and you say to yourself, oh, I'm going to work at Denny's for a couple of weeks and figure it out. Like, people are coming out of college with things already lined up, mm-hmm. jobs, different types of internships. So what was that period like for you? Were you trying to go the internship track? Did you already have something lined up?
So I knew, because I made the choice that I wanted to be an astrophysicist, I knew that I needed my PhD. So that meant that coming out of my bachelor, that I needed to get into grad school, which was going to be another handful of years. So the things that I did in undergrad when I was doing my bachelor's in physics were aligned with getting into a graduate program that would allow me to do the research that I wanted to and to be able to like thrive and succeed. Mm-hmm. So for me, you could think of them as internships. There are these research internships. I did research at Harvard one summer, and then I did research at one of the NASA facilities another summer. And that, along with the research that I did as an undergraduate, helped me get into the grad program at UCLA, where I've been. I'm now in my third year. And I recently, this past spring, I got my master's in astrophysics. So I'm done with classes and everything. I'm only doing PhD research now, and I still have about two-ish years left there. But yeah, it'll be different in different fields in academia, but there's like a best course of action and best path to succeed in that field, to like keep getting to the next level in that field. And it'll be different from some industry where, as you mentioned, you know, you need to get these internships sometimes, and the internships will actually lead to a secure position when you get done. And it's really important, as quickly sort of as you can find the thing that you're interested in doing, to understand how you can best set yourself up to smoothly, you know, at least be going in the right direction, so that your hard work is efficient and you're getting the most out of the time that you're putting in. Because college in itself is hard work. And just by understanding a little bit more for what is being looked for at your next step can really put you light years ahead of the competition. And it is super competitive, because everybody is getting, a lot of times people are getting the exact same degree. So kind of your ability to network or to, yeah, strategically, you know, position what you have done, or even strategically writing a resume or a CV, like that's a skill. There's a lot of things that you can do, but for me, just understanding from the people who were a little bit ahead of me what the best thing to do was, or what they did that did work or that didn't work, helped me to formulate my sort of plan of attack.
Okay, I like that. So I'm hearing different avenues here. Someone could go into research, data and analytics, private sector, where they're working with like an aerospace company, or for those of you that aren't sure of any, like it could be a Boeing, I imagine, or it could be going more governmental, where you're looking at NASA or other particular sectors, where I imagine your skills in science and your skills in mathematics go hand in hand when we're talking about like these certain level positions, right?
For sure. And one of the most common pathways for people in physics, astronomy, astrophysics is sort of transitioning into industry. And it's because you develop the math skills, the critical thinking skills, oftentimes the coding and data analysis skills. And you can take that anywhere where there's data to be analyzed, which is any modern company, right? People, you can, will go into like the finance sector, they'll go into aerospace, or just any company, like a startup is going to need somebody who understands statistics and how to do data analysis, and somebody who's probably good at coding as well. So you kind of get equipped with these really applicable skills that can help you transition into any number of fields, honestly, kind of whatever you're interested in.
And that's what sounds the coolest about this particular track, because it sounds like it's a perfect foundation for anybody that will likely want to switch their career or switch industries at some point. Because healthcare uses this, engineering uses this, technology, whether you want to go on the back end, computer programming, analytics side, or even like implementation side or QA. So it, you know, the things that I wish I knew if I could go back, but I don't know, all those years of math.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really useful, useful skills to develop. I wouldn't shy away from it. If I could do it all again, I would not shy away from that. And then I wouldn't have had to go back and relearn it in a harder way.
So yeah. what about some of our listeners that may be in high school, mm-hmm. and they're trying to think of what is the best way, now thinking back for yourself and lessons learned, could be the way that a high schooler could set themselves up for success? If they're thinking to themselves, okay, coming out, I know I'm going to go to college track. I know that I'm going to want to go into the sciences or mathematics. This is something that interests me. What are some things that they might want to do to kind of proactively set themselves up?
I think that getting involved, if what you're wanting to do is science and like a research capacity, the thing that you would want to get involved with is research, so you could see what that's like and sort of get an idea of what you'll be doing there. For example, if you're really, really interested in astronomy, you may be surprised to find that actually the vast majority of astronomy research is data analysis and coding and kind of working on the computer. And it's not so much the cool, you know, looking at cool 3D images that we see in the documentaries, or even spending all that much time underneath a telescope. And so if you're not going to like that process of research, then you would want to find that out as quickly as possible. So, I mean, whatever field it is that you're wanting to go into, that you can always get in contact with people who are on that path ahead of you. And, you know, in my experience, most people are very open and very willing to, you know, give Linda a helping hand, or, you know, even just meet and talk about what they do and what that looks like, what their day to day is. So, yeah, I would say reaching out to people who do what you want to do or what you think you want to do is a good start.
Thank you for that, because I don't think that type of advice is utilized enough, mm-hmm. where people even realize that that is an option to just reach out, send an email, cold call, see how you get through. Now, what about someone, or, well, let's kind of take it back a little bit. We always like to talk about pros and cons, because mm-hmm. you can love what you do, but that doesn't mean that every day is walking in sunshine. So what would be like one pro, and then what would be one con to your field and what you do?
To my field? Okay. Mm-hmm. So a pro is that I'm legitimately really interested in the, you know, material and information that I come in contact with every day. And that makes me excited to go to meetings, to do presentations, to teach, to make, you know, videos. It's for me, that's a massive pro, like probably the biggest one, the main reason is sort of why I'm here. But a big con is that when you're working in academia, there's like all of these sort of unwritten rules and traditions that academics and their kids seem to all be aware of. But if that isn't your pedigree, like, and it wasn't mine, like I was never, you know, I was never sort of on the academic track or anything when I was younger, where I have a lot of colleagues whose parents also have PhDs. Some of them are professors, you know, a lot of them did, you know, various engineering degrees or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's just this kind of mismatch in the groups. There are like these demographic offsets, and it makes it can be isolating and sort of alienating. Also in my field, it's like 1% Black. So it's not uncommon for me to be the only Black person wherever I'm at, in the classroom, in the department. I recently went to Hawaii with my research group, and it was awesome. It was a funded by my advisor, and I have an excellent advisor. That's another possible downside, is that you can kind of only go as far as your advisor takes you a lot of times. So if you're lacking that support, you can get kind of railroaded, and not, you know, to no fault of your own. But even, you know, when I went to Hawaii to visit the telescopes and stuff that we use, it's like I'm the only like Black person in within like thousands of miles or something like that, because, you know, Hawaii's in the middle of the ocean. But it, you know, that's not something that's uncommon, and it's not something that that causes me personally at this point in my life much added stress. But it is something that I had to. But it was something that did it at one point, you know, earlier in my career. And that's something that will like wear on you in a way that if you go ask an astronomer, you know, they may not be able to tell you that, or they may not be able to explain that, what it's like to be in a field that is just so lopsided in demographics like that.
Yeah, that definitely is a drastic transition from the world of sports, pretty much any sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
To now come in here. So would you say, in your experiences of definitely being the minority in an already finite group of people to begin with, that your experience has been about the same as most, as far as searching for the opportunities, for searching for the knowledge, searching for the help and assistance? Or have you found yourself in some cases just having to kind of roll your sleeves up and get a little bit more creative than maybe some of your other counterparts to get to the end point?
I think it's a little bit of both. I've over the course of the past few years have really realized how important and impactful and beneficial like networking is, and just developing good relationships with people. So as I'm proactive on that end, I actually tend to find that people will like go out of their way sometimes to, you know, help me get an opportunity, or connect me with a collaborator, or think about me on, you know, some project. And that is, I think, something that is not linked. I think that's completely independent to the, you know, the fact that I'm Black, or that there's so few Black people, and more so, you know, just lends itself to the importance that I place on networking and developing relationships. And, but with that being said, you know, there are things that you can do to try to combat the, you know, the fact that there are maybe a lot of people with implicit bias, or that are, you know, doing microaggressions and that sort of thing. And it's not, I don't think it's right that I should have to be like overextending myself in other areas to offset this. I don't think it's right. But at the same time, like, I want to do this. I want to do astronomy. I want to be, you know, successful in the field. So I have no problem, you know, expending whatever effort is needed to make that happen.
I love that. It's like you're taking the very discipline that you've learned all along, but just channeling that. So instead of it being sports, it went to academics. And then from academics, it went to the passion of getting into science and physics.
Yeah. Yeah. And focusing that energy on the things that I can control, because there is a slew of, you know, variables that none of us have any control over and can't do anything about. But there are, you know, just as many variables that we absolutely do have control over, and that we can work to positively impact. So yeah, I try to dump my energy into all the things that I can do to, you know, make success for myself more seamless.
Wonderful. All right, now we're going to hit to a hard-hitting question. It's a curveball. I like to throw it at you just like Larry King does, or did in his interviews. Do you think, or have you found evidence that extraterrestrials exist? I feel like if anybody knows, it would be you.
No. So there's no evidence that, there's no direct evidence that there's life anywhere else. But you have to think about what that means. that means that we haven't found something that we can look and conclusively say, oh, this is life, right? Now, just because we haven't found that doesn't mean that there isn't evidence that there is other life. And what I mean by that is the fact that we are here on Earth, to me, is evidence that life is something that happens on planets, at least under the right circumstances. So for me personally, I refuse to believe that this is a 1 over a trillion likelihood of something to happen. Like I feel like the fact that we're here means that this has happened somewhere else. And like that's, I don't know how common it is. You know, maybe it only happens once in a galaxy. Maybe it happens a million times in a galaxy. I don't really know that. And we don't have any evidence towards how likely or unlikely it is. So, but if we, you know, go explore the rest of the solar system and maybe find like single-celled life or fossils of single-celled life on Mars or on one of the moons of Jupiter or something like that, then I would say that there's a 100% chance that life is everywhere. But we don't have any evidence for it. And so it's hard for me to take any sort of claims about like UFOs being aliens serious, which that's a question that I get all the time. And I do believe that there are things that we don't know. Like there can be a UFO, there could be an unidentified drone that the government is using to test that doesn't want people to know. There are so many more likely things that UFOs could be than aliens. And that really just has to do with how far away stuff in space is. I don't think most people realize how far away things are.
I would agree to that. So let's kind of put it in percentage. If we're looking at 100%, what would be an estimated percentage of space that we actually have explored?
Oh, well,
or that we think.
By explore, do you mean like that we've actually like physically put a rocket there or like sent a satellite? Like, what do you mean by explore?
Yeah, like actually had some sort of satellite device go out and pull a bunch of data and information and send it back, or that we have explored by sending people there.
So if it's sending a human-made thing there, I would basically say that answer is, and it's going to sound funny, but it's basically 0%. It's probably like 0.00, maybe there's like 100 zeros or something like that, and then a 1 or something, because we've been to the moon, which doesn't take that long to get to the moon, like a few days on a rocket, a week or something like that. I don't remember the exact time, but it doesn't take long to get there. We have a rover on Mars. We've sent satellites out to like Pluto and all the other planets, but which is millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of miles that we've covered. But that's how big space is. That is basically 0% of the universe. Even, yeah, like if I had to put a percentage, I would say zero. I would say basically 0%.
So that means you heard it, people. We got to get the numbers up. We got to start with the youth. Okay. Let's get them invested early. And let's turn this into a big collective of people in this profession.
We definitely need a lot more young people.
Oh, man. Well, thank you so much for taking time to explain the pulsar map to us. We learned a little bit about space. Have we explored it? Not really, it sounds like. We've been in the backyard, but it's time to go beyond. And how competitive is the field, and what does it take to get in there? So especially if you're someone that loves math and numbers, like Eunice, you don't have to just go into finance. There are other options as well. So the earlier that you can explore it, the more people that you can reach out to and ask questions of. And maybe, is there an age limit on internships? I'm going to go out on a limb and say no.
No.
What's the most that someone's going to tell you? No, and then go to the next one. But there's never a limit on internships. So what if people have questions for you? They've had a chance to listen to the episode and maybe done research on their own on what programs or universities that might interest them and what their particular track is. How can they get in touch with you?
So you can definitely reach me on my socials. TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. It's all DT Starkid. I'm also starting a YouTube channel up here pretty soon. So I'll be having some videos on there and some really interesting discussion. But yeah, I would say DMing me on Instagram. I usually try to respond to as many of those as I can. People want any like quick advice about anything. But yeah, you could submit a question on TikTok. I oftentimes answer comments and questions that people ask with videos.
Okay, wonderful. And for those of you that couldn't write fast enough, don't worry. I'm going to have all the links in the show notes. So all you have to do is hit the more or details button. And then we encourage you to click like, subscribe, and follow. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Are there any final thoughts to the people?
Yeah. I mean, I think that all of our jobs as members of the universe, which we don't necessarily think of ourselves as, but we're all members of this universe, is to master it. It's to like master our own universe. And that goes from understanding, you know, basic knowledge to understanding ourselves, understanding how we fit into society and how people operate. And yeah, like my goal is that I master the universe, that we all master a universe. So yeah, be a master of your own universe. If you're interested in transitioning to any field, like look into it, make it happen, take those steps. Time is going to march on regardless. We have this fraction, this minuscule amount of time here, and absolutely you should spend it trying to do what interests you and what you love.
I love
Thank
that
you so much.
Yes. And I love your energy.
Thanks. Well,
thank you so much. Soon to be Dr. Dakota. But until then, we will call you astrophysicist. You're going to have a long title in the next couple of months. So you got to plan it out.
Yep. Next time y'all have me on, you're going to have to read off all the titles too.
You worked hard for it.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
All right, cousins. Thanks for listening to another episode. Tune in the 19th when we drop another one. Mind Your Manners with Jackie Vernon. So we're going to find out how she turned something that is age old into not only a thriving business, but she's changing lives, not just of adults, but youth and people of all ages, using what you may ask? Etiquette. That's right, etiquette. We're talking the napkin in the lap, the salad fork, the seafood fork, the soup spoon versus the dessert spoon, all of it, all of it. And we have her on the virtual couch. So as always, don't forget to think outside the box and tune in for our next episode dropping on the 19th.